Good evening, yogis. It is May 22nd, 2018. This is Abhyasa 204. I'm Banyan, and you're you. Thanks for listening in. I hope you're all happy and warm and cozy wherever you are in the world and whatever you're up to. Let's have a little chant for our teachers and their teachers and their teachers and theirs. Yogena chitasya parena vachyam malam sharirasya cha vaijakena yopa karotam pravaram muninam patanjalim pranjaliranatoshmi Abahu Purushakaram Shankachakrasidarinam Sahasra Shirasam Shvetam Pranamami Patanjalim Srimate Anant Daya Nagarajaya Namo Namaha. Okay, welcome back, everyone. So last week we were talking about kind of getting into the field of teaching meditation as opposed to teaching asana. And what I was hoping to do tonight is to spend some time just basically just practicing some different meditations, and I guess you could potentially use this one of two ways. One is you could use this recording just to kind of run through some of my favorite meditations for beginners. And if you're a teacher, if you're interested in kind of using these, then maybe you can pick up something just in the way the meditations are laid out, or the language that's used or not used. So that hopefully some of these meditations are ones that are suitable for some of your students too. Before we get into that, I had one quick little note that I thought would be worth responding to. This one says, and part of the reason I read it is to share the response and the question, but also just to keep reminding you that I love hearing from you. So if there's anything going on personally or professionally or yogally or even not yoga-ly, feel free to send it in, because you'd be surprised how many other people might be kind of sharing the same inquiry or the same experience, and I always check in before discussing it with the whole group. I would check in to make sure it's something you're comfortable talking about in front of the whole group or not. So just one more reminder. But this one went, "Hi Banyan, how are you? I've been trying to get my private yoga class offerings moving. Unfortunately, most of my family and friends are not into yoga. How do you encourage people to come to yoga when they feel they are too old, too heavy, too out of shape, etc.? I had one private client cancel because she's going through a hard time and feeling too anxious and overwhelmed, and I feel bad because she needs yoga even more now. How can I encourage people to dive in without being pushy? I was also wondering if you have any plans to do some yoga retreats on a long weekend. I know I won't be able to make the advanced training soon, but I would love to stay in the U.S. in the coming months. I enjoy your weekly sessions, but also would enjoy an in-person refresher without committing to several thousands of dollars in several weeks' times. Do you ever do YTT reunions? If you have, I'd be curious to know what percentage of people typically show up. it's nice meeting some of your other students online. Anyway, thanks for ongoing coaching and support. All right. So first off, I guess, regarding the encouraging people to come to yoga, I think you're kind of, you might be asking the wrong guy. I'm definitely no advertiser. In fact, I was just talking with Miranda earlier today about how resistant I am to so much of that. But I'm with you. I think it seems like the reasons that people don't practice are really common ones, right? I'm too old, I'm not flexible enough, I'm too anxious, I can't sit still, right? And I guess as a teacher, it's hard to swallow these reasons when you and I both know that yoga can actually have a pretty big impact on all these things. So one idea I have is you know, if you are advertising, maybe changing the language of your ads, and focusing on these, let's say, ailments or potential benefits, and saying, you know, like anxiety, aching joints, not flexible, try private yoga classes, right? Like, if what you're trying to sell is private yoga lessons, and you want to work with people who seem to have common excuses, why not address the excuse as a sort of potential benefit as Miranda would call it, a value proposition. Like, what value are you proposing, right? Or if you believe that yoga can address anxiety, then don't sell the yoga as a, you know, warrior vinyasa, blah, 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 right? Sell it as, here's a class for anxiety, right? Here's something that helps with anxiety. But I think, you know, you're on the right track for not being pushy. I don't think being pushy ever seems to help. In our last TT that I just got back from on, let's see, it was like Sunday night, or Saturday night, Sunday morning. Got home at 3 o'clock in the morning, and there was a student in that TT last month who wrote this really beautiful poem and shared it kind of during one of our open chair circles, and the poem said something like, it was a sort of rejection against the word should, right? She hated people using the word should with her, and wrote this whole beautiful poem about should this and should that, and I think, you know, especially Western people, let's say under the age of 60, you know, we really resist this kind of control. We resist this kind of container sometimes. We don't like being pushed into things. We don't like being told what to do, or we don't like having any of our choices stripped away from us. So, you know, I think as yoga teachers, we do kind of walk the line of sounding preachy, just doing what we do, telling people how to align their bodies, for example. It can really sound commandeering. So I think the safest bet to reduce the likelihood of being seen as preachy is just to be honest and be direct and patiently wait, right? Like waiting for them to arrive, waiting for them to walk in the door, because we can't, you know, you can't push anyone through the door. All you can do is wait, right? Wait for them to make the decision. And when they do make the decision, if they do make the decision, you know, we can just be ready to meet them where they are. And that kind of brings us back to the wording of how you reach out, right? Even the way you talk about it. If you're, you know, sitting at dinner and your friends and family are asking you about yoga, just take it as an opportunity to be vulnerable about your own experience, real about your own experience. Like, well, it's been really good for my anxiety, right? Or when I'm super overwhelmed, or, you know, I've had a really stressful day, or when I'm just too exhausted for anything else, it's the best medicine, right? And it's like if we were to share that kind of message with people, and just really kind of try to get the word out there that that it is medicinal for some of these things, then maybe a few more eyes would be open to it. But as I say, maybe I'm just not the best person to be asking this question. The TT reunion idea sounds interesting. It would be cool to see kind of what everybody's been up to. I am always kind of working on organizing some smaller workshops and trainings around the U.S. or Europe. So if you know of a good place to host one, definitely let me know. But yeah, what I'd like to do is kind of get into it, because we've got the better part of an hour, which technically would only be enough to go deep into one meditation. But I guess what I'm hoping to do is to try a couple. I want us to try at least a few of the meditations we described last week, the ones that I think are good ones for beginners. And I guess I'm hoping after we run through them, and you know, we can kind of just see how the time goes. But I'm hoping that after we do run through several of them, you have a kind of proclivity, you have like an attraction to one or two of them. And that maybe you could keep using that one or maybe those two in your own practice. So that's kind of my secret mission here. I'm hoping that one of these meditations will grab your attention and you'll keep doing it, right? So if you would, maybe now's a good time to get out your cushion or your favorite chair. You know, light a candle, do whatever you got to do, right? Hit your singing bowl, light some incense, get cozy, and we'll jump into the yoga of the mind. And that said, you know, if you do get tired, if your legs fall asleep, you know, you're also welcome to change positions or even to lie down for some of these. You know, as long as you're not falling asleep, lying down is okay. During long meditation retreats, you know, when you're sitting for 8 or 12 hours a day, you're often invited to stand every once in a while, just to stand and keep meditating, right, during some of the longer sittings. So don't torture yourself, is all I'm trying to say. If you get uncomfortable, feel free to move around. I did receive a letter from our group from a student who said that her practice was shifting recently from, like, mostly asana with some meditation or pranayama at the end if there's time, to mostly meditation and pranayama and some asana at the end if there's time. And that was an exciting thing for me to hear, right? Not because I don't see value in asana, but I'm always happy to hear of others. I feel like they're the slightly more mature yogis who are finding this value in meditation, right? Which is, as we talked about last week, it's a harder sell, but it's a massive, massive part of this practice. So before we begin, maybe just a couple of ground rules, a couple of reminders. The first reminder is we're not practicing meditation. Okay, the word, the language you use here is kind of important. As Deskachar mentions, we're trying to create the atmosphere in which meditation may occur. Okay? So, subtle change in language, but pretty important. We're not practicing meditation. We're trying to set up the atmosphere so that meditation happens. So you hear the difference there? It's like, just because your eyes are closed doesn't mean that you're in meditation. Technically, you're only in meditation once you've merged with the object of your focus. And I don't mean to say that to say that, like, you know, if you thought you were meditating for an hour a day, I'm not trying to take that away from you and say, no, you haven't been meditating. But etymologically, you haven't been, right? You've been sitting for that time. And I guess, Because I do kind of find myself excited by language and specificity and clarity, I'm trying to reserve the word meditation for this particular thing that happens called dhyana, right? And what I do with this etymological kind of quandary in my own practice, I've just renamed the process sitting. As in, you know, I'm going to go sit for a while. I sit first thing in the morning. And sometimes meditation happens and sometimes it doesn't, but it's almost like, in a certain way, it's relieved some of the pressure and expectation I have on myself. Because, you know, getting back to the letter that we heard from somebody from, you know, saying her students didn't feel like they were ready for a yoga practice on some level. I think, you know, like I hear a lot of students say like, oh, I can't meditate. My mind is too busy, right? I'm no good at meditation. And I'm like, well, how are you at sitting? Like, can you sit? Just try sitting for a few minutes, right? And I'm just trying to relieve some of the expectation from the word meditation. Just say, let's sit, right? Because the, you know, this is maybe the next kind of ground rule or reminder, right? The trouble with this idea of meditation, it's like we can start to get the idea that we're trying to get somewhere with our meditation, that like it only counts if like the magic recipe of breath and awareness and stillness all come together, right? Like a perfect souffle and it rises if the temperature's just right into this thing called dhyana. And, you know, I think that attitude of hopeful expectation, it's a little misleading. Because if you're like dividing your experience into like, oh, this is a moment that I'm not meditating and this is a moment that I'm properly meditating, it's like you're too busy evaluating. You're too busy judging your experience. And you're missing out on observing what's right in front of you, right? And that's kind of what the beauty of sitting really is. It's just observing what there is. Chirping bird, idling truck, you know, branch swaying, you know, steam rising from a cup of tea. And I think, you know, that might be easier said than done, right? Be able to remain present with what's right in front of us. You know, most of us believe that we have the busiest minds on the planet, right? That nobody else's mind could possibly be as crazy and crowded and busy as me, as mine, right? And that's, of course, because we've never been in anybody else's mind but our own. And so we walk around kind of feeling like we're maybe more anxious than anyone else or more full of vrittis than anyone else. And then when we sit down to meditate, we're definitely more distracted than anyone else. And we're worse at this than anyone else, right? I wonder, like, does anybody out there actually think that they're, like, awesome at meditation? Just say, like, does anybody sit down and just say, like, wow, like, that was a piece of cake, like, I could just do this for 12 hours straight and every moment I would just be sinking deeper and deeper into bliss and gratitude. I mean, do they? Like, do you? If so, I guess I'd like to really know about it, because usually what I see when I look out into a crowd of people meditating is a bunch of scrunched up faces of effort, right? And I don't mean to be sort of setting you up for the expectation of trouble or effort. What I do mean to be hopefully leading you towards is this idea that it's okay to lose focus. Like, it's totally normal. It's totally normal to lose focus while you're sitting. Totally normal. Is that clear? It's like, is it normal? Is it? Yes. Yes, it is. It's totally normal. And the sooner we start to let go of our impressions of what this thing should feel like, the sooner we start to get comfortable with our lack of focus, the sooner we stop judging where we think we ought to be, the easier this whole thing becomes and the more pleasurable it becomes. Because that ease is pretty key here, right? Not effort, not even, you know, will, but patience and ease. And so we've probably spent a good amount of time talking about the obstacle of discomfort, right? How quickly discomfort can get in the way of a sitting practice, and how we align our spines in a healthy way, so that they're upright but still. And how we arrange our shoulders and that whole game. But hopefully that's pretty second nature to you. If it isn't, maybe we can spend some more time another week. But as I've mentioned before, the second obstacle, once we've got our body comfortable, the second obstacle is expectation, and that's kind of what I've been just trying to give a few minutes to right now. So there you have it. If it's okay, what I'd like to do is spend a few minutes on each of these meditations, and maybe what would be fun is if we could maybe spend a few minutes on one, and then just have a short break where you can jot down a few notes. You know, what was that like for you? Was it easy? Was it hard? Were you thinking about everything but the guided cues? Did you have a strong image? And then maybe after we've got a few of them experimented with, we can kind of check in and share our notes. Okay? So, why don't we'll take a short break if you want to grab whatever you like to sit on or sit in or lay down or do your thing. And we'll start with Still Lake of the Mind in just a minute or two.